Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, June 8th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Proposed Plan to Help Teachers, Homeowners. MISD. Less tax money coming in means smaller recapture payment to Austin. By Stuart Doreen. Because Texas voters approved a greater homestead exemption from $25,000 to $40,000 in May, that means less money coming into the school district for the 2022-23 school year, a $19.5 million decrease compared to what was expected just weeks ago. District officials, however, don't expect much of an impact to the money spent inside the classroom. In fact, they said the reduction of property tax revenue in this property-rich district means Midland ISD's recapture payment will drop nearly $18.4 million, from $172.340 million to $153.944 million. Total revenue is expected to reach $437.564 million, around a $21 million increase from the revised 2021-22 budget. Total expenditures are expected to hit $437.068 million, also an increase from $416.096 million. With the election of the homestead exemption increasing from $25,000 to $40,000, that means that exemption will reduce the revenue from property values, Midland ISD Chief Finance Officer Darrell Dodds said. That reduction in property values for Midland ISD means we will be collecting less taxes on the property, and that will reduce our recapture on the maintenance and operations side. But it also reduces how much per penny we had to pay on that. It's a great thing for our taxpayers that this is happening. Midland ISD board members heard Tuesday during a third budget workshop that the details were pretty much the same, other than the changes in property taxes and recapture. That includes more than $190 million dedicated to salaries and benefits, the largest expenditure in the proposed 2022-23 budget. Other expenditures include $3.22 million for campuses, $41.795 million for departments, $153.944 million for recapture, and $37.426 million for partnerships. There also are no expectations of changes to the proposal for an increase to teacher pay. The starting pay is expected to increase to $58,500. Other district highlights expected are staff retention incentives of $1,000 per district employee and increases to the per-hour wages salaries to support staff and other MISD staff members, respectively. And the taxpayer in Midland received more good news. Along with the increase in the state homestead exemption and the existence of a local homestead exemption, a valuations increase is expected to drop the total tax rate from $1.0236 per $100 valuation to $0.9148, guaranteeing a decrease in the homeowner's tax payment as the taxable value for a homestead cannot increase more than 10% a year. Midland Central Appraisal District officials have previously told the Reporter-Telegram this spring that estimated residential valuations across the district will increase generally around 4 to 5%. Some areas may see more and others less. A public hearing on the budget and proposed tax rate is set for June 27th. The board is scheduled to vote on the 2022-23 budget at that meeting. This article is entitled 4.0 Quake Strikes Near Big Spring. region has experienced four quakes of similar magnitude in last week. By Stuart Doreen. A pair of earthquakes magnitude 4.0 or greater hit the West Texas region Monday. One quake, magnitude 4.0, hit north-northwest of Big Spring on Monday morning, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The second happened in far west Texas, west of Mentone. The USGS shows a magnitude of 4.3. The USGS reported that the quake took place around 3:14 a.m. near Big Spring, just off Highway 87, west of the unincorporated city of Knott in Howard County. The quake happened at a depth of 4.34 miles and was the second quake to happen in that general area in the previous week. A 2.3 magnitude quake happened southwest of that location on June 2nd. The tracking website earthquaketrack.com also shows two smaller quakes happened closer to Stanton in the past 5 days. A 4.6 magnitude quake hit north of Stanton on December 28th. In far west Texas, the seismic activity continues with 40 quakes in the past 7 days, according to earthquaketrack.com on Tuesday. The 4.3 magnitude quake happened early Monday morning at a depth of 2.5 miles. The quake was the farthest west of any of the activity in the last 4 days. The tracking site also showed it to be in a similar area as the 4.6 magnitude quake that took place June 1st. The quake Monday was the third 4-plus magnitude quake in the far west Texas region in the last week. There have been 165 quakes in the past 30 days and 2,083 in the past 365 days in the region near Mentone, according to earthquaketrack.com. This article is entitled NWS, Not 107 Degrees, But Still Hot. Tuesday's high temperatures: Midland, 102 degrees, Pecos, 107, Fort Stockton, 108, Alpine, 101. Midland hot weather notes: consecutive 100-degree days, 3. 100-degree days this year through June 7th, 13. Forecast highlights: at least 100 degrees 5 of the next 6 days, with highest temperature to be 104 on Sunday. High of 98 expected Thursday. No rain in the 7-day forecast. Keach-Byram Drought Index. Increased Tuesday, 6 points to 549. Midland County Fire Marshal Justin Bunch has previously told the Reporter-Telegram that the county will not enact a burn ban until our KBI is at or above 575. This article is entitled Texas Pacific Land Corporation Donates $1 Million to Hogan Park Project, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy announced Tuesday it has received a foundational contribution from Texas Pacific Land Corporation to help fund the Hogan Park Initiative. As a native Midlander, and with a large business presence here, we're pleased to give back to the tremendous local community, said Tyler Glover, CEO of TPL. We're excited to be part of the Hogan Park Initiative and look forward to local residents being able to enjoy all of the amenities on a daily basis. The Hogan Park facilities will be improved and expanded to include a new splash pad, sports fields, playgrounds, hike and bike trails, as well as public entertainment space in the 128-acre revitalized park. As the community in Midland continues to grow, the importance of how and where outdoor space is provided becomes increasingly important. Access to quality green spaces promotes physical health and active lifestyles, provides safe outdoor spaces for children to play, and creates a supportive environment to relax and socialize. The $1 million donation from Texas Pacific Land Corporation brings the Conservancy's fundraising total thus far to $31 million. This article is entitled, DPS Finds Truck Involved in Fatal Hit-and-Run Crash, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The vehicle in question from Monday's fatal Martin County hit-and-run motorcycle crash was located in Martin County near Tarzan, according to the Department of Public Safety. The vehicle, according to DPS, has been identified as a commercial truck tractor with sand trailer, an 18-wheeler. DPS also reported that the driver has been identified, and the company that owns the truck is cooperating with the investigation. At this time, the investigation is ongoing and no further details are available, DPS reported. The Texas Department of Public Safety would like to thank the media and the community for their help in this investigation. On Monday, DPS reported that a 2009 yellow Honda motorcycle was struck from the rear by another vehicle believed to be a truck tractor with a trailer or other large commercial vehicle, 18-wheeler. The crash occurred at about 12:45 p.m. Monday on Texas 176, about 8 miles west of Tarzan in Martin County. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Texas Sees 3,160 More Oilfield Services Jobs, by Kyra Buckley, staff writer. Houston. The country's oilfield services sector continued to add jobs last month as oil and gas companies moved forward with planned increases in drilling this year. Texas added about 3,160 oilfield services jobs in May for a total of 306,411, according to an analysis of preliminary federal data from industry trade group Energy Workforce and Technology Council. Overall, the country added close to 4,775 jobs in the sector last month for a total of 628,793, according to the preliminary data. Demand for oil and gas was already on the rise as the global economy recovers from the pandemic. Now, as countries sanction Russian oil in retaliation for Moscow's war on Ukraine, officials are pushing for U.S. oil and gas producers to ramp up output to help ease soaring gasoline and utility prices. I'm optimistic that our industry and workforce are up to the challenge to meet growing global demand by increasing domestic production while reducing global emissions, said Leslie Beyer, Energy Workforce CEO, in a statement. Without the powerhouse of American energy, the world suffers, the economy suffers, and millions of people face energy and food insecurity. While companies are working to increase production overall this year, they are sticking to planned increases instead of quickly ramping up output, analysts have said. Instead, companies have remained focused on increasing shareholder returns. Even with West Texas Intermediate, the nation's benchmark, at more than $110 per barrel, WTI settled 37 cents lower Monday at $118.50. The nation's rig count, an indicator of oil and gas production, was flat last week, said oil services company Baker Hughes. While companies have added 271 rigs over the past year, the U.S. count was stagnant at 727 last week. It's almost value destruction if you try to accelerate anything now, Occidental Petroleum CEO Vicky Haloub told investors. And some of the longer-term projects just can't get started because of the cost involved. Now, for those of us that had plans in place, and there are other companies that have done this too, but those of us that had plans in place and had those plans in place early enough, we've been able to mitigate some of the impact of the inflation and all that. In addition to inflation, the war and an uneven pandemic recovery have also led to disruptions in the global supply chain making it harder for drilling companies to get material. Still, experts expect oil and gas jobs to continue making gains even as companies opt for more moderate production increases. Norwegian research firm Rystad Energy says U.S. oil and gas employment could increase by 108,000 jobs to 971,000 by the end of the year. The firm also expects global investment in fossil fuel production to grow 20% this year to more than $344 billion. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, June 8th. Captola Tadlock. Captola Cappy Elaine Tadlock went to be with her Heavenly Father on June 4th while her family was by her side. She was born on July 7, 1942 in Odessa to Lois Burleson Maples and Ben Ned Maples. She is survived by her four children, Andrea Fine and Michael of Abilene, George Bridges Jr. and Michael Slaymaker of Orlando, Florida, Rhonda King and Kevin of Midland, Christy Cates and Jeff of Midland, sister Pat Henderson of Midland, brother Ben Maples of Goldbust, as well as seven grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, husband U.M. Tadlock Jr., brothers Eugene Maples and Charles Cobb, sister Lavana Hodges, and beloved grandson Zachary Glasscock. The family will receive friends for visitation Wednesday, June 8th from 4 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. A memorial service will be Friday, June 10th at 1 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly, followed by an interment at Sunset Memorial Gardens. For memorials, Elaine loved flowers, or donations may be made to the organization of your choice. Jack R. Honeycutt. We are sad to announce that we have lost a true West Texas legend. In the early morning hours, June 6th, Jack R. Honeycutt passed away peacefully at home with family after a hard-fought battle with cancer. He was born June 15, 1936 in Snyder to parents Cecil Herman and Eula Vera Honeycutt. Predeceased by his parents and brothers, Jack leaves behind his wife of 58 years, Judy Honeycutt, son Brian Honeycutt, his wife Cindy and their children Amanda and Jake, daughter Kara Melton and her children Ashley, Bradley, and Callie, as well as great-grandchildren Madison and Mason, and many nieces and nephews. There will be a visitation on Thursday, June 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. We will have a small burial service at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Lubbock on Friday, June 10th at 2 p.m. There will be a memorial service for Jack Saturday, June 11th at 3:30 p.m. at First Christian Church in Midland, followed by a reception at the Petroleum Club of Midland at 5 p.m. in the Wildcatter Room. If you would like to make a donation in lieu of flowers, the family would like to suggest Hospice of Midland and First Christian Church of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Julia May Lady Muller. Julia May Lady Muller was born January 1, 1923 in Midland. Lady is preceded in death by her parents, Porter and Julia Rankin, her son Herbie Miller, brothers Mann, Robert, and F.E. Rankin, sisters Nancy McKinley and Rose Rankin. Lady is survived by her daughters, Susan Vorweck and Juliet Muller, son Art Muller and wife Barbara, son Harry Muller and wife Nancy, 10 grandchildren, and numerous great-grandchildren. The family will receive family and friends on Thursday, June 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Roy Marita Kuntz. Roy was born in Lenora, Texas on June 5, 1938, to Riva Estella Standifer and Marita Likey Kuntz. Roy, at 83 years old, passed away at home on June 2nd, surrounded by family and loved ones. He is survived by his wife, Jean Kuntz, of 63 years, three children, daughter Rena Harris and spouse Clay Harris, son Randall, Randy Kuntz, and spouse Carolyn Kuntz, and son Daniel, Danny Kuntz, and spouse Julie Kuntz, 12 grandchildren, 25 great-grandchildren. His brother, Gerald Kuntz, and spouse Betty Sue Kuntz of Sun City, Texas. He was preceded in death by his father, Marita Kuntz, mother, Reva Kuntz, brother, Earl Kuntz, and brother, Thad Kuntz. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 9th at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 10th at First United Methodist Church in Stanton, with interment following at Evergreen Cemetery. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Russell Hugh Adkins. Russell Hugh Adkins passed away unexpectedly December 14, 2021. He was born February 24, 1983 in Midland to Greg Adkins, DVM, and Nancy Goble, DVM. Russell is survived by his father, Greg Adkins, mother, Nancy Goble, stepmother, Janice Adkins, and his wife, Jessica Adkins. Also surviving Russell is his brother, Tim Johnson, and wife, Danielle. Russell's two children are Kylie Adkins, 11, and Caden, 6. Russell's family also includes several aunts and uncles. The celebration of life will be held June 11th at the T.L. Ranch, 1795 County Road 410, Navas, Texas. Contact Janice Adkins at iCloud.com with questions. Tommy Lynn Gibson. Tommy Lynn Gibson, 62, of Midland, passed away on Friday, June 3rd, surrounded by his family. The family will receive friends on Thursday, June 9th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be held on Friday, June 10th at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Chapel, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Tommy was born on January 2nd, 1960, to Mary Sue and R.V. Gibson in Abilene. He is survived by his mother, Mary Gibson, wife, Shauna Gibson, son, Wesley Gibson, daughter Tiffany Gaylor and husband Matthew Gaylor, three sisters Karen Davis and husband Chuck, Glenda Hanshew and Melinda Ditmore, two grandchildren Kason Gibson and Ethan Gaylor, brother-in-law Patrick Curry, his wife Lydia Curry, as well as numerous nieces and nephews, and his first wife Jo Gibson. He is preceded in death by his father, R.V. Gibson, his brother-in-law, Jimmy Hanshew, and both sets of grandparents. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Clara Coleman King. Clara Coleman King, 88, of Midland, passed away June 6th. The family will receive guests from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, June 9th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 10th at Greenwood Baptist Church Cemetery. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, June 8, 2022. Safety on Agenda at Council Meeting by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council spent nearly 30 minutes during its work session Tuesday talking about safety in light of the Uvalde shooting that took the lives of 19 children and two teachers. Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven said he asked the item be placed on the agenda because he has received calls from concerned citizens who express an interest in having the city assess just how well prepared the community is should another active shooter situation arise. What are we doing to access our community? Because we need, as human beings, we wind up becoming complacent, and I thought that was a very valuable discussion to have and to see if anyone on council has any thought processes, Hovind said. Hovind recalled back in late 90s, the council asked for Odessa police officers to begin attending council meetings when the Republic of Texas group made some threats against the city, and officers now regularly attend their meetings. The Odessa Police Department offers civilian response to active shooter events, trainings, and perhaps the city can coordinate with other entities to make sure everyone knows it's available, Hovind said, noting there are other similar active shooter-related trainings also available. The mayor also brought up the possibility of exploring a community-wide alert app. The city did have a mass alert system during the 2018 Odessa mass shooting, but it was not used as a turnover in personnel left no one able to utilize it. Also, not that many people signed up for the alerts prior to the shootings. Councilmember Mark Mata and Hovind also spoke about the need to educate the public on what is expected of them when they arrive at an active shooter crime scene, pointing out one mother in Uvalde was handcuffed for a while and ended up going into the school later anyway to rescue her two children. Council member Denise Swanner spoke about the need for additional signage at Odessa Municipal Court regarding banned weapons, noting the signs are currently located on the courtroom doors, but not near the entrance. That topic led to a discussion on having an armed police presence in all municipal buildings, the cost factor, and the manpower it would take. You can't put a price tag on a life, but it is very expensive to have someone assigned to every building, Councilmember Mary Willis said. Mata also pointed out that lately there have been unsettling incidents at municipal pools. Odessa Fire Chief John Alvarez said since Uvalde, there have been discussions between his department and OPD about making sure his paramedics work closely with police officers during such events. He noted, "We are now hearing some of the children bled to death. In some instances, paramedics may be able to get into warm zones to treat and evacuate patients while officers are dealing with the hot zone," Alvarez said. When he entered the fire service nearly 30 years ago, Alvarez said he never would have dreamed of the day when firefighters would have to have ballistic shields on their engines, but that's where we are now. The council agreed the key is to get the word out about what trainings are available and to encourage people to attend and not get complacent. A recent training sponsored by Medical Center Hospital in the city, Stop the Bleed, received scant media attention and was ill-attended, Hovind noted. The council agreed their discussion Tuesday was a good start. Following the meeting, Hovind announced in a news release the formation of an active shooter training task force. The mayor said it has become clear that an inadequate response from local law enforcement combined with poor training of school staff and a failure to adhere to simple school safety protocols contributed to the unspeakable loss of life of innocent children and teachers in Uvalde. No official report has been made public about what went wrong in Uvalde. It will likely be months before a comprehensive report is complete. As Mayor Hoven wrote, it's his responsibility to make sure the community is able to respond quickly, precisely, and skillfully to any threat. Toward that end, Hoven said he is requesting the involvement and cooperation of all local law enforcement agencies, school, churches, and business owners to participate in a comprehensive and ongoing training program to prepare our community to react quickly and decisively to any threat posed by an active shooter. The training will be regular and consistent and consist of real-life simulations, Hoven wrote. He'll be reaching out to Sheriff Mike Griffiths, ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray, Medical Center Hospital President Russell Tippin, and other community leaders to form the coalition in the coming days, Hoven wrote. No one knows when an evil person bent on death and destruction will unleash the darkness of their heart, but we as a community can respond quickly and forcefully to minimize the damage wrought by such evil and can save lives if we are prepared to do so, Hoven wrote. In other matters, the council heard from Utilities Director Tom Kerr about proposals to replace water lines on Crane Avenue that were placed in the late 40s. And a 7,000 water line in an alley near 56th Street and El Paso that was put in 1956. The designs for the former project will be nearly $121,000, and the latter is expected to be about $168,475. The council also learned that ODC would like it to approve a $2.4 million grant for a company that plans to build a carbon capturing facility in the Permian Basin. Occidental Petroleum and a group of partners is considering building a new $810 million facility in Pinwheel that could help reduce the area's carbon footprint. The plant would remove 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide directly from the air in what would be the world's largest direct air capture project. According to a Houston Chronicle article, the facility would join 70 direct air capture facilities that are expected to become active by 2035. Students get taste of screen printing by OA News. Under the watchful eye of Clarabelle Olivas, a handful of students from across the area took part in a screen printing camp at University of Texas Permian Basin. It was the second day of art camp at the Charles A. Sorber Visual Arts Studios. The morning session was screen printing, and the afternoon was digital photography. Next week, it will be 3D printing in the morning and stop-motion animation in the afternoon. Olivas is a recent UTPB graduate who did printmaking, lithography, and intaglio. There were 5 students in Olivas' class Tuesday. They're learning how to print on T-shirts so they get to create their own design. And then I show them how to expose it on a screen where they can print on T-shirts or tote bags or anything loose, anything that's textile pretty much, Olivas said. She added she has enjoyed teaching the camp so far, although it was only the second day. It's interesting to see how the kids open up after a little bit, like there's some in there that are a little shy, Olivas said. Nehemiah Garcia, 12, who is going into 7th grade at Abel Junior High in Midland, said this is also his first time in the class. "I always like summer activities, something to do in the summer," Garcia said. He said the class is fun and he likes art, especially sketching. Moses Williams, 13, who will be going into 8th grade at St. John's Episcopal School, said he has enjoyed drawing and talking to people. He likes being on the UTPB campus, too. "It's a pretty neat campus," Williams said. Valentina Alvarez, 15, who is going into 8th grade at St. Mary's Central Catholic School, said she has taken the class because she wants to do screen printing when she is older. "I think it's fun," Alvarez said. "She likes making her own designs and putting it on a t-shirt." Like Williams, she thinks being on the UTPB campus is cool too. "I want to be here once I'm older," Alvarez said. Mexican oil, gas deals tantalized. Current president of Mexico puts up roadblocks to reforms, by Bob Campbell. Dealing with Mexico's energy industry has proved problematic for American companies since the approval of encouraging oil and gas reforms in 2013 and 14. Texas' southern neighbor has had hydrocarbons for about as long as everyone else has, and its Congress passed a constitutional amendment in 1938 that nationalized the industry, prohibiting development contracts with private companies. Faced with drastically falling production and drooping tax revenues, the Mexican Congress passed reforms under President Enrique Peña Nieto, who served from 2012 to 2018, to allow profit-sharing or production-sharing contracts with American companies. But current President Andrés Manuel López Obrador dislikes that prospect and is trying to prevent it from happening. Many of Mexico's oil and gas wells around the country are about tapped out, and the nation confronts the need to develop its western oil share with fracking near Campeche Bay and to drill offshore there because its oil output has decreased from 3.5 million barrels a day in 2003 to 1.8 million barrels a day last year and 1.7 million barrels a day now, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Andrew Colgan, senior manager for tax and trade policy with the American Petroleum Institution in Washington, D.C., says the situation has reached a point of great frustration because American oil and gas companies have invested billions of dollars in Mexico since the reforms, mostly in the midstream and downstream sectors. However, as leader of the minority Moreno, a national regeneration movement party, López Obrador has as yet been unable to persuade the more powerful PRI and the PAN parties to rescind all the reforms, although he has changed some regulations to make the necessary permitting more uncertain, Colin said Wednesday. He is trying to renationalize Mexico's energy industry by eliminating the reforms of 2013 and 14 and making Pemex the state oil company and CFE, the electric utility company, the national monopolies, Colgan said. There is a lot of concern in the U.S. about unfair treatment and retaliation from the Mexican government. He said the American company's investments were based on confidence that Mexico would follow the terms of the North American Free Trade Agreement and the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement on Trade, which went into effect last year after being negotiated by former President Trump. Colgan said a new day in Mexico's oil and gas business was also expected because Pemex lost $11 billion last year and ended 2021 owing $109 billion, making it the most indebted national company in the world, with 58% of its government's revenues coming from taxes on Pemex and CFE. They lack expertise in things like fracking and deep water projects, he said. Mexico has 6 oil refineries, including one it bought from Royal Dutch Shell last year in Deer Park, east of Houston, and it is building a new one in Tabasco, the home state of López Obrador, whose 1 6-year term will end in 2024. Texas Alliance of Energy Producers President Jason Modglen said the very productive Eagle Ford Shale play doesn't end at the border. There are incredible opportunities in Mexico to modernize the fields and add to the North American energy industry, Modglen said from Austin Tuesday. The current administration in Mexico has been particularly challenging in terms of foreign investments in pipelines to modernize delivery both to the citizens of Mexico and potentially leverage cross-border traffic so both countries can take advantage of the natural resources that exist on both sides of the border. It's a very big country that is adjacent to the most important places in the world, the Permian Basin and the Gulf of Mexico. So it's natural that there should be opportunities in both countries, which are looking for energy security and affordable energy. So hopefully the Biden administration will move forward and we will find a way to make this new free trade zone with Mexico and Canada work. Midland Oil and Gas attorney Bill Kelton said no oil company wants to become a partner with Pemex because they cannot provide money and expertise and may not be able to pay for basic necessary services. Pemex has been required to obtain a guarantee of payment from the Mexican government through legislative actions to obtain basic supplies and contract services because it is regarded as a bad risk. Kelton said the situation reached the crisis stage in the early 2000s when it became obvious that Mexican oil reserves were rapidly depleting with no prospect of new production. Quick hits. Trial to resume today, Odessa American. There will be a one-day hiatus in the intoxication manslaughter trial of an Odessa woman accused of killing twin 6-year-olds. Judge Dean Wallen of the 70th Ector County District Court informed jurors Tuesday morning the hiatus was needed because of one of the 4 attorneys involved in the case had taken ill. The trial of Angelica Garcia, 38, is expected to resume Wednesday at 9 a.m. and wrap up sometime on Thursday. Garcia is accused of being intoxicated when her vehicle struck Mia and Maya Coy as they played outside their family's fireworks stand on July 3, 2019, on the North Service Road of East Highway 80 at Club Drive. The trial began Monday. Blood Drive. Vitalant has scheduled a blood drive from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. today at Schlumberger's 7220 West I-20. to make an appointment, visit donorsbytalent.org. Map Making, the Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled map making from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. today in the basement activity room. For more information, call 432-332-0633. Help a Hero. In addition to Odessa and Midland's Bubba's 33 donating $1 for every Patriot burger sold to Homes for Our Troops, the public is also invited to an evening of entertainment, games, prizes, arts and crafts, face painting, a spin-to-win wheel, and Patriot Burgers from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. today in the front parking lot of the VFW, 208 East 63rd Street in Odessa. OHH Black Gold Bash. Oilfield Helping Hands has scheduled the 4th annual OHH Black Gold Bash from 6 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. today at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. Michael Martin Murphy, the Ector County Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, will present the Michael Martin Murphy The Road Beyond Tour event from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. today. For tickets or more information, visit theector.com. Woman Accused of Stalking by OA News. A 40-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Friday for stalking members of her own family. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a resident in the 8800 block of Rice Avenue called authorities around 8 a.m. Friday to complain that Amy Burton had been parking outside the resident and screaming at those inside the home despite receiving a criminal trespass warning barring her from the property in March. One of the residents of the home told police Burton has threatened in the past to get a gun and use it on them, the report stated. An officer found Burton asleep inside a vehicle parked at the curb in front of the house and a letter from Burton on the windshield of the vehicle parked in the driveway, the report said. Burton declined to speak with the officer. An officer also discovered Burton was convicted of assault, family violence in 2020, and terroristic threats, family violence in 2021. Online, Ector County District Court records indicate Burton was declared a vexatious litigant in September 2020, and as such is prohibited from filing documents at the courthouse without permission from a local administrative judge. Burton was arrested on suspicion of stalking. She was released from the Ector County Jail Monday after posting a $1,500 surety bond. Odessan arrested on warrant by OA News. An Odessa man who struck a deal with prosecutors in an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon case was arrested Monday after his probation officer accused him of violating the deal. According to online Ector County District Court records, Colby Ray Tavares, 20, admitted back in January to using a pair of scissors to cut someone, and he was placed on community supervision for a period of 5 years. Under the terms of the plea agreement, Tavares's guilty plea will not be entered into the system unless he fails to successfully complete his community supervision. But court records show that on May 20th, prosecutors filed a motion asking he be arrested and adjudicated guilty. According to the motion, Tavares was arrested May 15th on suspicion of possession of a controlled substance of more than 28 grams but less than 200 grams. his community supervision officer further accused him of possessing or using Xanax, possessing, using, selling, or having a narcotic drug, moving without telling his officer, and failing to submit a random drug testing. Tavares was booked into the Ector County Jail and is being held without bond. OPD arrests man on arson charge by OA News. A 29-year-old Odessa man was arrested Saturday after officers responding to a call found his trailer and his vehicles drenched in gasoline. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call a few minutes after midnight Saturday from the 4800 block of North Golder Avenue. When one of the officers went inside the home, he could smell gasoline, and a woman told him her husband, David Steve Ortiz, had threatened to burn the home down and poured gas all over using a red metal can. The officer found a red metal can inside a bedroom with a paper towel wrapped around the handle. He thought could be used as the fuse, the report said. Officers also discovered gas had been poured throughout the wife's Lincoln Navigator and Ortiz's Dodge Caravan, according to the report. Ortiz himself smelled of gasoline and had a torch lighter in his pocket, the report stated. Ortiz was arrested on suspicion of attempted arson of a habitation and was released from Ector County Jail Tuesday after posting a $25,000 surety bond. Obituaries: Billy Wayne Bronco Messingale, Big Springs. Billy Wayne, a.k.a. B.W. Bronco Messingale, was born June 12, 1941, in Fort Worth, Texas, and passed away on May 31st. Billy Wayne was the son of Roy Williams and Nanny Lee Barr Messingale, who preceded him in death. Also preceding him in death was his wife, Mary Lou Messingale. He is survived by his granddaughter, Caitlin Janel Annie Garza Messingale, and daughter, Catherine Consuelo Messingale Mascarina, and her husband, Pablo. The family will receive friends from visitation Thursday, June 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. A graveside service with military honors will be held Friday, June 10th at 10 a.m. at the Odessa 2nd Section of Ector County Cemetery. Cheryl Wilburn, Comanche. Cheryl Kavinsky Wilbur, 67, of Monahans, Texas, passed away peacefully in Comanche, Texas, on June 3rd. Her family will gather privately at a later date to celebrate her life. Cheryl was born on April 20, 1955, in Manchester, Connecticut. She was the daughter of Lucille Marie O'Brien and John Edward Kavinsky. Survivors include her mother, Lucille Kavinsky, daughter, Christina Colwell, son, Robert Wilbur, brothers, James Kavinsky and Mark Kavinsky, sister, Gail Wolkowski, as well as several grandchildren and nieces. She was preceded in death by her father, John Edward Kavinsky. Death notices. Evan Wade Alexander, Odessa. Evan Wade Alexander, 28, of Odessa, died Friday, May 27th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. June 7th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Naomi Moretta Rita Bates, Odessa. Naomi Moretta Rita Bates, 83, of Odessa, died Wednesday, June 1st in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, June 10th at Sunset Memorial Gardens Cemetery.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 21, 2022. Viewpoints. No stopping student athletes from getting paid for likeness. Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. Sometimes you can't make everyone happy. There are people who have been calling for student athletes to be paid for years. That finally happens, and now people are upset about name, image, and likeness. People have been saying that athletes should be able to move from school to school like coaches. They finally get the ability to do so, and now they can't stop complaining about the transfer portal. Me? I had no problem with the previous status quo, and I am fine with the new normal, but I can't stand the complaining now. Coaches are complaining. Actually, that can be entertaining. You tell them, Jimbo. Fans are complaining. Analysts are complaining. Here's the deal. NIL, the ability of a student athlete to be paid for his or her marketability, will take some time to get used to. But you can't standardize it. Students have the right to be compensated as much as their likeness will allow, and their ability to earn money will differ based on school size, alumni support, college community, etc. Texas schools will have an advantage here, a big advantage. Those supporting Texas A&M and the University of Texas in particular will operate in this new NIL world and be able to throw obscene resources at students that few schools will be able to match. It is not their fault the rules have changed. It is not their fault that so many called for players to be able to cash in on their celebrity. The fact is, major college athletics has been an arms race for decades. Lately, that race revolved around facilities and the paying of coaches. Decades ago, collecting as many players as possible was the goal. Then, under-the-table contributions were a greater part of the game, and SMU showed everyone how to do it. Unfortunately, Mustang boosters were a little too brazen about their activities. Still, I'd like to think they were ahead of their time. Their blueprint, which included actual contracts, was similar to how successful collectives will operate in today's cash grab. The payment of athletes is tricky because we are basically talking about such a small percentage of athletes being impacted. We are talking about mostly football and basketball players. Universities can't pay those athletes directly, like employees, because Title IX issues would require that if a university pays some athletes, that it would inevitably have to pay them all, from football to gymnastics. Smaller schools, including those at the NCAA Division II level and below, can't operate in such a system with their limited budgets. And now, any restrictions on NIL would end up in court so fast, because the student's marketability is being denied, that enforcement becomes difficult, to say the least. Alabama coach Nick Saban might not like it, but there doesn't appear much that he or anyone else can do to change it. As for the transfer portal and the free agency that it sets up, make it more structured. But in the end, that isn't going to change much. Comedian Jerry Seinfeld was right that fans of sports teams, professional or college, root for laundry. We root for the brand. We cheer for the jersey. You might not like that the person wearing is getting paid, maybe even handsomely, for wearing that jersey, but there were probably some who never got over the breakup of the Southwest Conference. I say college sports will continue to evolve, and that will continue to frustrate some, probably because their favorite school wasn't able to adapt or was left out. Either way, I am happy for those students' athletes that are making money. They deserve it, and it certainly isn't their fault someone else will cut them a check. Don't like it? Stop watching college sports. Fat chance too many people will be doing that.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.